Lines of light cut through that shroud. Kinetics and lasers were striking out from what remained of the asteroid's facing hemisphere, sweeping in arcs as they tried to find Tyrant. The ship swerved and stabbed like a dancing snake. The edge of a laser gashed across part of its hull, triggering a shriek of damage alarms. Merlin dispatched the Nova mines, then swung the nose around to bring the gamma cannon into play. The flashes of the Nova mines began to pepper the shrouded face of Mundar. The kinetics and lasers were continuing, but their coverage was becoming sparser. Merlin sensed that they had endured the worst of the assault, but the approach had enacted a grave toll on Tyrant. One more direct hit, even with a low-energy weapon, might be enough to split open the hull. Tyrant had reduced its speed to only a few kilometers per second relative to the asteroid. Now, they were beginning to pick up the billowing front of the debris cloud. Tyrant was built to tolerate extremes of pressure, but the hot, gravelly medium was nothing like an atmosphere. Under other circumstances, Merlin would have gladly turned around rather than push deeper. But Tyrant would have to cross the kinetic defense screen to reach empty space. And now he had used up all his charm torps. If the tactician had indeed been coordinating Mundar's defenses, then Merlin saw only one way to dig himself out of this hole. He could leave nothing intact, even if it meant butchering whoever was left alive in Mundar. Debris hammered the hull. Merlin curled fingers into sweat-sodden palms. "Merlin," Teal said. "It's Struxer's signal again, only it's not coming from inside Mundar." Merlin understood as soon as he shifted his attention to the navigational display. Struxer's transmission was originating from a small moving object, coming toward them from within the debris field. The gamma cannon was still aimed straight at Mundar. Merlin shifted the lock onto the object, ready to annihilate it in an instant. Then he waited for Tyrant's sensors to give him their best estimate of the size and form of the approaching object. He was expecting something like a mine or a small autonomous missile, trying to camouflage its approach within the chaos of the debris. But then, why was it transmitting in the first place? He had his answer a moment later. The form was five-nubbed, a fat-limbed starfish, or a human wearing a spacesuit, drifting through the debris cloud like a ragdoll in a storm. "Suicidal," Baskin said. There was no face now, just a voice. The signal was too poor for anything else. Teal listened and said, "He's asking for you to slow and stand down your weapons. He says we've reached a clear impasse. You'll never make it out of this area without the tactician's cooperation, and you'll never find the tactician without his assistance." Merlin had manual fire control on the gamma cannon. He had settled one hand around the trigger, ready to turn that human starfish into just another crowd of hot atoms. "I said I was past the point of negotiation." "Struxer says dozens have already died in the attack, but there are thousands more of his people still alive in the deeper layers. He says you won't be able to destroy the tactician without killing them as well." "They picked this fight, not me." "Merlin, listen to me. Struxer seems reasonable. There's a reason he's put himself out there in that suit. I blew up his asteroid. That might have something to do with it. He wants to negotiate from a position of weakness, not strength. That's what he says. Every moment where you don't destroy him is another moment in which you might start listening." "I think we already stated our positions, didn't we?" "He said you wouldn't be able to take the tactician, and you can't, that's clear. You can destroy it, but you can't take it. And now he's asking to talk." "About what?" Teal looked at him with pleading eyes. Just talk to him, Merlin. That woman you showed me, your mother, waiting by that window. The sons she lost, you and your brother. I saw the kindness in her. Don't tell me you'd have made her proud by killing that man. My mother died on Plenitude. She wasn't in that room. I showed you nothing, just ghosts, just memories, stitched together by my brother. Merlin. He squeezed the fire control trigger. Instead of discharging, though, the gamma cannon reported a malfunction. Merlin tried again, then pulled his shaking, sweat-sodden hand from the control. The weapons board was showing multiple failures and system errors, as if the ship had only just been holding itself together until that moment. You cold-hearted... Teal started. Your sympathies run that deep, Merlin said. You should have spoken up before we used the torps. Baskin levelled a hand on Merlin's wrist, drawing him further from the gamma cannon trigger. Perhaps it was for the best, after all. Only Struxer really knows the fate of the tactician now. Bring him in, Merlin. What more have we got to lose? Struxer removed his helmet. The visor pocked and crazed from his passage through the debris cloud. Merlin recognised the same drawn, weary face that had spoken to them from within Mundar. He made an acknowledgement of Prince Baskin, speaking in the Havergal tongue, Merlin swearing that he picked up the sarcasm and scorn despite the gulf of language. He says it was nice of them to send royalty to do their dirty work, Teal said. Tell him he's very lucky not to be a cloud of atoms, Merlin said. Teal passed on this remark, listened to the answer, then gave a half-smile of her own. Struxer says you're very lucky that the tactician gave you safe passage. That's his idea of safe passage, Merlin asked. But he moved to a compartment in the cabin wall and pulled out a tray of coiled black devices, each as small and neat as a stone talisman. He removed one of the translators and pressed it into his ear, then offered one of the other devices to Struxer. Tell him it won't bite, he said. My ship's very good with languages, but it needs a solid baseline of data to work with. Those transmissions helped, but the more we talk, the better we'll get. Struxer fingered the translator in the battered glove of his spacesuit, curling his lips in distrust. Cohort man, he said, in clear enough mien. I speak a little your language. The prince made us take school, in case cohort come back. So you'd have a negotiating advantage over the enemy? Merlin asked. It seemed prudent, Baskin said. But most of my staff didn't see it that way. Struxer was one of the exceptions. Be careful who you educate, Merlin told him. They have a tendency to start thinking for themselves. Start doing awkward things like defecting and holding military computers to ransom. Struxer had pushed the earpiece into position. He shifted back to his native tongue, and his translated words buzzed into Merlin's skull. Ransom. Is that what you were told, cohort man? My name's Merlin, and yes, that seems to be the game here. Or did you steal the tactician because you'd run out of games to play on a rainy afternoon?
You have no idea what you've been drawn into. What were you promised, to do his dirty work?
Teal said. Merlin doesn't need you. He just wants the tactician.
A thing he neither understands nor needs, and which will never be his.
I'd still like it, Merlin said.
You're too late, Struxer said. The tactician has decided its own fate now. You've brought those patrol groups closer. With that crude display of strength, They'll close on Mundor soon enough, but the tactician will be long gone by then.
Gone? Baskin asked.
It has accepted that it must end itself. Mundar's remaining defences are now being turned inward, against the asteroid itself. It would rather destroy itself than become of further use to Havergal, or indeed Gefurius.
Chip, Merlin said, tell me this isn't true.
I would like to, Tyrant said, but it seems to be the case. I am recording an increasing rate of kinetic bombardments against Mundar's surface. Our own position is not without hazard, given my damaged condition.
Merlin moved to the nearest console, confirming for himself what the ship already knew. The opposed fleets were altering course, pincering in around Mundar. Anti-ship weapons were already sparking between the two groups of ships, drawing both into closer and closer engagement.
The tactician will play the patrol groups off each other, drawing them into an exchange of fire,
Struxer said, with an icy sort of calm.
Then it will parry some of that fire against Mundar, completing the work you have begun.
It's a machine, Baskin said. It can't decide to end itself.
Oh, come now,
Struxer said, regarding Baskin with a shrewd, sceptical scrutiny.
We're beyond those sorts of secrets, aren't we? Or are you going to plead genuine ignorance?
Whatever you think he knows, Merlin said, I've a feeling he doesn't. Struxer shifted his attention onto Merlin.
Then you know?
I've an inkling or two. No more than that. About what?
Teal asked.
Merlin raised his voice.
Chip, start computing an escape route for us.
If the kinetics are being directed at Mundar, then the defence screen ought to be a little easier to get through, provided we're quick.
You're running?
Baskin asked. With the prize so near?
In case you missed it, Merlin said, the prize just got a death wish. I'm cutting my losses before they cut me.
Buckle in, all of you.
What about your syrinx? Teal demanded.
I'll find me another. It's a big old galaxy, bound to be a few more knocking around.
Ship, are you ready with that solution? I am compromised, Merlin. I have hull damage, weapons impairment, and a grievous loss of thruster authority. There can be no guarantee of reaching clear space, especially with the build-up of hostile assets.
I'll take that chance, thanks. Struxer, you're free to step back out of the airlock any time you like. Or did you think all your problems were over, just because I didn't shoot you with the gamma cannon? Tyrant began to move. Merlin steadied a hand against a wall, ready to tense if the G-loads climbed sharply.
I think our problems are far from over.
Struxer answered him levelly.
But I do not wish to die just yet. Equally, I would ask one thing.
You're not exactly in a position to be asking for anything.
You had a communications channel open to me. Give me access to that same channel and allow me to make my peace with the tactician before it's too late.
A farewell, if you wish.
I can't talk it out of this course of action, but at least I can ease its conscience.
It has no conscience, Baskin said, grimacing as the acceleration mounted and Tyrant began to swerve its way around obstacles and incoming fire.
Oh, it most certainly does,
Struxer said. Merlin closed his eyes. He was standing at the door to his mother's parlour, watching her, watching the window. She had become aware of his silent presence and bent around in her stern black chair, her arms straining with the effort. The golden sun shifted across the changing angles of her face. Her eyes met his for an instant, liquid grey with sadness. The eyes of a woman who had known much and seen the end of everything. She made to speak, but no words came.
Her expression was sufficient, though. Disappointed, expectant, encouraging. A loving mother, well used to her son's failings, and always hopeful that the better aspects of their nature might rise to the surface. Merlin and Galanul, last sons of plenitude. "Damn it all," Merlin said under his breath. "Damn it all."
"What?" Teal asked.
"Turn us around, ship," he said. "Turn us around and take us back to Mundar, as deep as we can go." They fought their way into the thick broil of the dust cloud, relying on sensors alone, 1,000 fists hammering their displeasure against the hull, until at last Tyrant found the docking bay. The configuration was similar to the Renouncer, easily within the scope of adjustments that Tyrant could make, and they were soon clamped on. Baskin was making ready to secure his vacuum suit when Merlin tossed him a dun-coloured outfit. "Cohort immersion suit, put it on. You as well, Struxer, and be quick about it."
"What are these suits?" Baskin asked, fingering the ever-so-ragged, grubby-looking garment.
"You'll find out soon enough." Merlin nodded at Teal. "You too, soldier. As soon as Tyrant has an electronic lock on the tactician, it can start figuring out the immersion protocols. Won't take too long."
"Immersion protocols for what?" Baskin asked, with sharpening impatience.
"We're going inside," Merlin said. "All of us. There's been enough death today, and most of it's on my hands. I'm not settling for any more." It waited beyond the lock, the only large thing in a dimly lit chamber walled in rock. The air was cold and did not appear to be recirculating. From the low illumination of the chamber, Merlin judged that Mundar was down to its last reserves of emergency power. He shivered in the immersion suit. It was like wearing paper.
"Did I really kill hundreds, Struxer?"
"Remorse, Merlin."
Something was tight in his throat. "I never set out to kill, but I know that there's a danger out there beyond almost any human cost. They took my world, my people, left Teal without a ship or a crew. They'll do the same to every human world in the galaxy, given time. I felt that if I could bring peace to this one system, I'd be doing something. One small act against a vaster darkness."
"And that excuses any act?"
"I was only trying to do the right thing."
Struxer gave a sad sniff of a laugh, as if he had lost count of the number of times he had heard such a justification.
"The only right action is not to kill Merlin. Not on some distant day when it suits you, but here and now, from the next moment on. The tactician understands that."
Struxer reached up suddenly, as if to swat an insect that had settled on the back of his neck.
"What's happening?"
"The immersion suit's connecting into your nervous system," Merlin said. "It's fast and painless, and there won't be any lasting damage. Do you feel it too, Prince?"
"It may not be painful," Baskin said, "but I wouldn't exactly call it pleasant."
"Trust us," Merlin said. "We're good at this sort of thing." At last, he felt ready to give the iron tactician his full attention. Its spherical form rested on a pedestal in the middle of the chamber, the low light turning its metallic plating to a kind of coppery brown. It was about as large as an escape capsule, with a strange, brooding presence about it. There were no eyes or cameras anywhere on it, at least none that Merlin recognised. But he had the skin-crawling sensation of being watched, noticed, contemplated, by an intellect not at all like his own. He raised his hands.
"I'm Merlin. I know what you are, I think. You should know what I am as well. I tried to take you, and I tried to hurt your world.
I'm sorry for the people I killed. But I stand before you now, unarmed. I have no weapons, no armour, and I doubt very much that there's anything I could do to hurt you.
You're wasting your words, Baskin said behind him, rubbing at the back of his neck.
No, Struxa said. He isn't. The tactician hears him. It's fully aware of what happens around it.
Merlin touched the metal integument of the iron tactician, feeling the warmth and throb of hidden mechanisms. It hummed and churned in his presence and gave off soft liquid sounds, like some huge boiler or laundry machine. He stroked his hand across the battered curve of one of the thick armoured plates, over the groove between one plate and the next. The plates had been unbolted or hinged back in places, revealing gold-plated connections, power and chemical sockets, or even rugged banks of dials and controls. Needles twitched and lights flashed, hinting at mysterious processes going on deep within the armour. Here and there, a green glow shone through little windows of dark glass. Tyrant whispered into Merlin's ear, via the translator earpiece. He nodded, mouthed back his answer, then returned his attention to the sphere.
You sense my ship, Merlin said. It tells me that it understands your support apparatus, that it can map me into your electronic sensorium using this immersion suit. I'd like to step inside, if that's all right.
No answer was forthcoming, none that Merlin or his ship recognised. But he had made his decision by then, and he felt fully and irrevocably committed to it.
Put us through, ship, all of us. We'll take our chances.
And if things take a turn for the worse? Tyrant asked.
Save yourself, however you're able. Scuttle away and find someone else that can make good use of you.
It just wouldn't be the same, Tyrant said.
The immersion suits snatched them from the chamber. The dislocation lasted an instant, and then Merlin found himself standing next to his companions, in a high-ceilinged room that might well have been an annex of the Palace of Eternal Dusk. But the architectural notes were subtly unfamiliar, the play of light through the windows not that of his home, and the distant line of hills remained resolutely fixed. Marbled floor lay under their feet. White stone walls framed the elegant archwork of the windows.
I know this place, Baskin said, looking around. I spent a large part of my youth in these rooms. This was the Imperial Palace in Lurga, as it was before the abandonment.
Even in the sensorium, he wore a facsimile of the immersion suit, and he stroked the thin fabric of its sleeve with unconcealed wonder.
This is a remarkable technology, Merlin. I feel as if I've stepped back into my childhood. But why these rooms? Why recreate the palace?
Only one doorway led out of the room in which they stood. It faced a short corridor, with high windows on one side and doors on the other. Merlin beckoned them forward.
You should tell him, Struxa. Then I can see how close I've come to figuring it out for myself.
Figured what out? Baskin said.
What really happened when they attacked this place? Merlin said. They walked into the corridor. Struxa seemed at first lost for how to start. His jaw moved, but no sounds came. Then he glanced down, swallowed, and found the words he needed.
The attack's a matter of record, he said. The young Prince Baskin was the target, and he was gravely injured. Spent days and days half buried, in darkness and cold, until the teams found him. Then the prince was nurtured back to strength, and finally allowed back into the world. But that's not really what happened.
They were walking along the line of windows.
The view beyond was vastly more idyllic than any part of the real Havergal. White towers lay amongst woods and lakes, with purple-tinged hills rising in the distance, the sky beyond them an infinite storybook blue.
"I assure you it did," Baskin said. "I'd remember otherwise, wouldn't I?"
"Not if they didn't want you to," Merlin said. He walked on for a few paces. "There was an assassination strike, but it didn't play out the way you think it did. The real prince was terribly injured, much worse than your memories have it." Now an anger was pushing through Baskin's voice.
"What do you mean, the real prince?"
"You were substituted," Struxer said. "The assassination attempt played down. No mention made of the extent of the real prince's injuries."
"My bloodline," Teal said. "This is the reason it's broken, isn't it?" Merlin nodded, but let Struxer continue.
"They rebuilt this palace as best they could, even then. It was never as idealized as this. Most of the east wing was gone. The view through these windows was less pretty. It was only ever a stopgap before Lurga had to be abandoned completely."
They had reached the only open door in the corridor. With the sunlit view behind their backs, their shadows pushed across the door's threshold into the small circular room beyond. In the middle of the room, a small boy knelt surrounded by wooden battlements and toy armies. They ranged away from him in complex concentric formations, organized into interlocking ranks and files, as tricky as any puzzle. The boy was reaching out to move one of the pieces, his hand dithering in the air.
"No," Baskin whispered. "This isn't how it is. There isn't a child inside this thing."
Struxer answered softly.
"After the attack, the real prince was kept alive by the best doctors on Havergal. It was all done in great secrecy. It had to be. What had become of him, the extent of his injuries, his dependence on machines to keep him alive, all of that would have been far too upsetting for the populace. The war was going badly. Public morale was low enough as it was. The only solution, the only way to maintain the illusion, was to bring in another boy. You looked similar enough, so you were brought in to live out his life. One boy swapped for another."
"That's not what happened."
"Boys change from year to year, so the ruse was never obvious,"
Struxer said. "But you had to believe. So you were raised exactly as the prince had been raised, in this palace, surrounded by the same things, and told stories of his life, just as if it had been your own. Those games of war, the soldiers and campaigns, they were never part of your previous life. But slowly, you started to believe an imagined past over the real one, a fiction that you accepted as the truth."
"You said you grew bored of war," Teal said, "that you were a sickly child who turned away from tabletop battles and became fascinated by languages instead. That was the real you breaking through, wasn't it? They could surround you with the instruments of war, try to make you dream of it, but they couldn't turn you into the person you were not, even if most of the time you believed the lie."
"But not always," Merlin said, watching as the boy made up his mind and moved one of the pieces. "Part of you knew, or remembered, I think. You've been fighting against the lie your whole life, but now you don't need to. Now you're free of it."
Struxer said, "We didn't suspect at first. Even those of us who worked closely with the tactician were encouraged to think of it as a machine, an artificial intelligence. The medical staff who were involved in the initial work were either dead or sworn to silence, and the tactician rarely needed any outside intervention. But there were always rumours, technicians who had seen too much,
glimpsed a little too far into the heart of it. Others, like myself, who started to doubt the accepted version of events. This easy story of a dramatic breakthrough in artificial intelligence. I began to question. Why had the enemy never made a similar advancement? Why had we never repeated our success? But the thing that finally settled it for me was the tactician itself. We, who were the closest to it, we sensed the changes. Changes? Baskin asked. A growing disenchantment with war. A refusal to offer the simple forecasts our military leaders craved. The tactician's advice was becoming quixotic, unreliable. We adjusted for it, placed less weight on its predictions and simulations. But slowly, those of us who were close to it realised that the tactician was trying to engineer peace, not war. Peace is what we've always striven for, Baskin said. But by one means, total victory, Structure said. But the tactician no longer considered such an outcome desirable. The boy who dreamed of war had grown up, Prince. The boy had started to develop the one thing the surgeons never allowed for. A conscience, Merlin said. A sense of regret. The boy froze between one move and the next. He turned to face the door, his eyes searching. He was small-boned, wearing a soldier's costume tailored for a child. We're here, Struxer said, raising a hand by way of reassurance. Your friends. Merlin spoke to you before. Do you remember? The boy looked distracted. He moved a piece from one position to another, angrily. You should go, he said. I don't want anyone here today. I'm going to make these armies fight each other so badly, they'll never want to fight again. Merlin was the first to step into the room. He approached the boy carefully, picking his way through the gaps in the regiments. They were toy soldiers, but he could well imagine that each piece had some direct and logical correspondence in the fleets engaging near Mundar, as well as Mundar's own defences. Prince, he said, stooping down with his hands on his knees, you don't have to do this, not any more. I know you want something other than war. It's just that they keep trying to force you into playing the same games, don't they?
When he didn't give the military planners the forecasts they wanted, Struxer said, they tried to coerce him by other means, electronic persuasion, direct stimulation of his nervous system.
You mean torture? Merlin said. No, Baskin said. That's not how it was. The tactician was a machine, just a machine.
It was never that, Merlin replied.
I knew what needed to be done, Struxer said. It was a long game, of course. But then, the tactician's strength has always been in long games. I defected first, joined the brigands here in Mundar. And only then did we start putting in place our plans to take the tactician.
Then it was never about holding him to ransom, Merlin said.
No,
Struxer said. All that would have done is prolong the war. We'd been fighting long enough, Merlin. It was time to embrace the unthinkable, a real and lasting ceasefire. It was going to be a long and difficult process. And it could only be orchestrated from a position of neutrality, out here between the warring factions. It would depend on sympathetic allies on both sides. Good men and women, prepared to risk their own lives in making tiny, cumulative changes. Under the tactician's secret stewardship, we were ready, eager even. In small ways, we had begun the great work. Admit it, Prince Baskin. The tide of military successes had begun to turn away from you in recent months. That was our doing. We were winning. And then Merlin arrived.
Struxer set his features in a mask of impassivity.
Nothing in the tactician's forecasting predicted you, Merlin,
or the terrible damage you'd do to our cause. I stopped, didn't I? Only when Mundar had humbled you.
The room shook, dust dislodging from the stone walls, one or two of the toy soldiers toppling in their ranks. Merlin knew what that was. Tyrant was communicating the actual attack suffered by Mundar through to the sensorium. The asteroid's own kinetic weapons were beginning to break through its crust.
It won't be long now, he said.
Teal picked her way to Merlin's side and knelt between the battlements and armies, touching a hand to the boy.
We can help you, she said, followed by a glance to Merlin. Can't we?
Yes, he said,
doubtfully at first, then with growing conviction.
Yes, Prince Baskin, the real prince,
the boy who dreamed of war and then stopped dreaming.
I believe it too.
There isn't a mind in the universe that isn't capable of change. You want peace in this system, something real and lasting, a peace built on forgiveness and reconciliation, rather than centuries of simmering enmity. So do I. And I think you can make it happen. But for that, you have to live. I have a ship. You saw me coming in, saw my weapons and what they could do. You blooded me good as well. But I can help you now. Help you do what's right. Turn the kinetics away from Mundar, Prince. You don't have to die.
I said you should go away, the boy said.
Teal lifted a hand to his cheek.
They hurt you, she said. Very badly. But my blood's in you, and I won't rest until you've found peace. But not this way. Merlin's right, Prince. There's still time to do good.
They don't want good, the boy answered. I gave them good, but they didn't like it.
You don't have to concern yourself with them now, Merlin said, as another disturbance shook the room. Turn the weapons from Mundar.
Do it, Prince.
The boy's hand loitered over the wooden battlements. Merlin intuited that these must be the logical representation of Mundar's defence screens. The boy fingered one of the serrated formations, seemingly on the verge of moving it.
It won't do any good, he said.
It will, Merlin said.
You've brought them too near, the boy said,
sweeping his other hand across the massed regiments, in all their colours and divisions.
They didn't know where I was before, but now you've shown them.
I made a mistake, Merlin admitted, a bad one, because I wanted something too badly, but I'm here to make amends.
Now it was Baskin's turn to step closer to the boy.
We have half a life in common, he said. They stole a life from you and tried to make me think it was my own. It worked too. I'm an old man now, and I suppose you're as old as me, deep down. But we have something in common. We've both outgrown war, whether those around us are willing to accept it or not.
He lowered down, upsetting some of the soldiers as he did, the boy glaring for an instant, then seeming to put the matter behind him.
I want to help you. Be your friend, if such a thing's possible. What Teal said is true. You do have her blood. Not mine, no. But it doesn't mean I don't want to help.
He placed his own hand around the boy's wrist, the hand that hovered over the wooden battlements.
I remember these games, he said. These toys. I played them well. We could play together, couldn't we?
Slowly, with great trepidation, Baskin risked turning one of the battlements around, until its fortifications were facing outward again. The boy said,
I wouldn't do it that way.
Show me how you would do it, Baskin said.
The boy took the battlement and shifted its position. Then he took another and placed them in close formation. He looked up at Baskin, seeking both approval and praise.
Say, that's better. isn't it?
Much better,
Baskin said. You can move that one, the boy said, indicating one of the other battlements. Put it over there, the other way round.
Like this?
Baskin asked, with a nervous, obliging smile. A little closer. That's good enough. Merlin realized that he'd been holding his breath while this little exchange was going on. It was too soon to leap to conclusions, but it had been a while since the room last shook. Hardly daring to break the fragile spell, he slipped into a brief sub-vocal exchange with Tyrant. His ship confirmed that the reign of kinetics had ceased. Now for the tricky part, Merlin murmured, as much for himself as his audience. Prince, listen to me carefully. Rebuild those defences. Do it as well as you can, because you need to protect yourself. There's hard work to do, very hard work, and you need to be at your strongest. I don't like work, the boy said. None of us do. But if you're bored with this game, I've got a much more interesting one to play. You're going to engineer a piece and hold it. It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done, but I've no doubt that you'll rise to the challenge. Struxer whispered,
Those fleets aren't exactly ready to set down their arms, Merlin.
I'll make them, he said. Just go give the prince a running start. Then it's over to him. But he corrected himself. Over to all of you, in fact. He'll need all the help he can get, Struxer. Merlin leaned in closer to the boy, until his mouth was near his ear. We're going to lie, he said confidingly. We're going to lie, and they're going to believe us, those fleets. Not forever, but long enough for you to start making peace seem like the easier path. It's a lot to ask, but I know you're up to it. The boy's face met Merlin's. Lie? You'll understand.
Tyrant, open a channel out to those ships. The whole binary system, as powerful a signal as you can put out. Hijack every open transmitter you can find, and translate these words as well as you can.
Then he frowned to himself and turned to Teal.
No, you should be the one. Better that it comes from a native speaker than my garbled efforts.
What would you like me to say? Merlin smiled. He told her. It did not take long.
This is Teal of the Cohort, she said. Her words gathered within the sensorium, fed through Tyrant, pushed out beyond the ruins of Mundar, through the defence screens, out to the waiting fleets, onward to the warring worlds.
I came here by Waynet a little while ago, but I was here once before, more than 1,000 years ago, and I knew King Kurtul before you set him on the throne. I stand now in Mundar, ready to tell you that the time has come to end this war. Not for an hour, or a day, or a few miserable years, but forever. Because what you need now is peace and unity, and you don't have very long to build it. A Husker attack swarm is approaching your binary system. We slipped ahead of them through the Waynet, but they will be here. You have less than a century, perhaps only a handful of decades. Then they'll arrive.
Teal shot a look at Merlin, and he gave her a tiny nod, letting her know that she was doing very well, better than he could ever have managed.
Ordinarily, it would be the end of everything for you. They took my ship, and I'm with a man who lost a whole world to them. But there's a chance for you. In Mundar is a great mind. Call him the Iron Tactician for now, although the day will come when you learn his true name. The Iron Tactician will help you on the road to peace. And when that peace is holding, the Iron Tactician will help you prepare. The Tactician knows of your weapons,
of your fusion ships and kinetic batteries. But in a little while, he will also know the weapons of the cohort and how best to use them. Weapons to shatter worlds or defend them. Teal drew breath, and Merlin touched his hand to her shoulder in what he hoped was a gesture of comradeship and solidarity. Hort the tactician, and you'll be powerless when the swarm arrives. Protect it, honour it, and you'll have an honest chance. But the tactician would sooner die than take sides. Good, Merlin breathed. He's my blood, Teal continued, my kin, and I'm staying here to give him all the protection and guidance he needs. You'll treat me well, because I'm the only living witness you'll ever know who can say she saw the Huskers up close, and I'll do what I can to help you. Merlin swallowed. He had not been expecting this, not at all. But the force of Teal's conviction left him in no doubt that she had set her mind on this course. He stared at her with a searing admiration, dizzy at her courage and single-mindedness. You'll withdraw from the space around Mundar, Teal said, and you'll cease all hostilities. A ship will be given free passage to Havergal, and then on to the Waynet. You won't touch it, and you won't touch Mundar, or attempt to claim the tactician. There'll be no reminders, no second warnings. We're beyond such things. This is Teal of the Cohort, signing off for now. You'll be hearing more from me soon. Merlin shook his head in astonishment. You don't have to do this, Teal. That was courageous. But you're not responsible for the mess they've made of this place. I'm not, she said. But then again, we had our chance when we traded with them, and instead of helping them to peace, we took one side and conducted our business. I don't feel guilty for what happened all those years ago, but I'm ready to make a change. She does have an excellent command of our language, Baskin said. And she's persuasive, Struxer said. Very persuasive. Merlin made sure they were no longer transmitting. You all know it's a lie. There's no attack swarm heading this way. Not how Teal said it was. But there could be. And for a few decades, there'd be no way of saying otherwise. Not with the senses you have now. Here's what matters, though. You've been lucky so far, but somewhere out there, you can be sure there is a Husker swarm that'll eventually find its way to these worlds. 100 years, 1,000, who knows? But it will happen, just as it did to Plenitude. The only difference is, you'll be readier than we ever were. Then he turned to direct his attention to the boy. You'll have the hardest time of all, Prince. But you have friends now, and you have my confidence. I know you can force this peace. For all the toys and battlements, some spark of real comprehension glimmered in the boy's eyes. But when they find out she lied, it'll take a while, Merlin said, and by then you'll just have to make sure they've got used to the idea of peace. It's not such a bad thing. But then again, you don't need me to tell you that. No, the boy reflected. Merlin nodded, hoping the boy, what remained of the boy, felt something of the confidence and reassurance he was sending out. I have to go soon. There's something I need on Havergal, and I'd rather not wait too long to get my hands on it. Whatever authority I still have, Baskin said, I'll do all that I can to assist. Thank you. Then Merlin turned back to the prince. I hope you won't be alone again. I'll leave the immersion suits behind, and a few spares. But even when Teal and Struxer and Baskin can't be with you, you don't have to be without companionship.
he dipped his head at the ranged formations. There are two other boys who used to enjoy games like this, but like you, their hearts were always elsewhere. They could come here if you like. I think you'd get on well. Doubt flickered across Teal's brow. He nodded at her, begging her to trust him.
They could come, the boy said doubtfully. I suppose.
Merlin, Teal said.
Yes.
I'm not sure if we'll see each other again after you've left this place. And I know it isn't going to be safe out there, whatever sort of ceasefire we end up with. But I want you to know two things.
Go on.
I'm glad you saved me, Merlin. If I never showed my gratitude until now, it wasn't needed. The war took too much from both of us, Teal. There was nothing else that had to be said. You'll do all right here. I know it. Maybe I'll drop back.
You know you won't, Teal said. Just as you'll never go back to plenitude.
And the other thing.
Take your ship. Take your syrinx and find your gun. For me. For your mother. Your brother. For all the dead of plenitude. For all the dead of the Shrike, for all who died here. You owe it to all of us, Merlin.
He made to speak, but between one moment and the next, he decided that words were superfluous. They met eyes for one last time, and an acknowledgement passed between them. A recognition of obligations met, duties faced, of good and bold hopes for better times. Then he dropped out of the sensorium. He was through into Tyrant in a matter of seconds.
Get us out of here, he said. Suspend all load ceilings. If I break a few bones, they'll just have to heal.
Complying, Tyrant said.
Merlin's little dark ship was bruised and lame, but the acceleration still came hard and sudden. And he came very close to regretting that offhand remark about his bones.
When you have a chance, he said, transfer Galanul's sensorium through to the Iron Tactician. All of it. The whole of the Palace of Eternal Dusk.
While keeping a copy here, you mean?
No, Merlin said. Delete it. Everything. If I ever need to walk those corridors again, or watch my mother looking sad, I'll just have to go back to Mundar.
That seems extreme.
Tell that to Teal. She's made more of a sacrifice than I'll ever know.
Tyrant punched its way through the thinning debris cloud. Merlin studied the navigation consoles, watching with a fascinated distraction as the ship computed various course options, testing each against the last, until it found what promised to be a safe passage to...
No, Merlin said. Not the Waynet.
Not until we've gone back to Havergal and claimed that Syrinx.
Did you not study the data, Merlin? I looked at it closely after your inspection of the Syrinx.
It's real.
Real, but damaged beyond safe use. More risky to use than the Syrinx you already have. I'd have mentioned it sooner, but...
What do you mean, damaged?
Probably before Pardalot ever sold it on, Merlin. I doubt there was any intention to deceive. It's just that a broken Syrinx is very hard to distinguish from a fully functioning one, unless you've had quite a lot of experience in the matter.
And... You kept that from me.
I was curious, Merlin, as were you. Another artificial intelligence. I thought we might at least see what this Iron Tactician was all about.
Merlin nodded sagely. Occasionally, he reached a point where he felt that little was capable of surprising him, but always the universe had something in store to jolt him out of that complacency.
While we're on the subject, then,
That little stunt you pulled back there, when I tried to shoot Struxer with the gamma cannon.
You'd have come to regret that action, Merlin. I merely spared you endless years of racking remorse and guilt.
By contravening a direct order,
which was foolish and unnecessary, and born entirely out of spite. Besides, I was the damaged party, not you.
Merlin brooded. I didn't know you had it in you.
Then we've both learned something new of each other, haven't we?
He smiled. It was the only possible reaction. But let's not make too much of a habit of it, shall we?
On that, Tyrant said, I think we find ourselves in excellent agreement.
He felt the steering jets cut in, rougher than usual, and he thought about the damage that needed repairing, and the difficult days ahead. Never mind, though. Before he worried about those complications, he had a few small prayers to ask of his old, battered Syrinx. He hoped they would be answered.